where do you see an investor coming in, and when they make this money, is 1031 exchange their only place to go to save on taxes, or do they have any other options?
It's a good point, which is why we have to give higher yields. That's first and foremost. To answer the question about depreciation, once we start getting occupancy, so basically we're net cash flow positive and we have net operating income, we can start depreciating pro rata the shopping strip.
Welcome to REI Secrets Spill, Fast Track to Riches, the go-to podcast for anyone looking to master the art of real estate investment and retire confidently. Whether you are a seasoned investor or just starting out, you're in the right place to discover the strategies and insights to help you retire on your terms. We'll break down complex concepts into easy-to-understand insights, ensuring that you'll find valuable takeaways no matter where you are in your investment journey. So, get ready to unlock the secrets of real estate investing and step into a future where you can retire like a boss. It's time to turn those retirement dreams into reality. Let's dive in.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to REI Secrets Spill, Fast Track to Riches. This is Sanjay Hegde, and today I have with me Dr. Manan Desai. I hope I said that right, Dr. Desai.
Perfect.
So Dr. Desai is a board-certified physician and trusted advisor within the medical sector. And, he has he has structured and scaled, healthcare companies from $5 million to $2 billion in revenue. And he brought his knowledge and experience with strategic thinking as well as structures in place to the commercial real estate market. And in 2021, Dr. Desai started, co-founded Malabar Hill Capital. So welcome, Dr. Desai, to REI Secrets Spill, Fast Track to Riches. Here we speak not only about multifamily investments, but we talk about investments in general in the real estate, its pros and cons, the challenges that an operator faces, as well as some of the benefits that the investors can see by investing in various asset classes. So welcome, Dr. Desai.
Thanks for having me today.
Awesome. So, Dr. Desai, what actually brought you into the real estate market? Can you tell us a journey? How did you start in the medical field, and what happened that made you come into the real estate market?
Absolutely. So, practicing physician for over 25 years, practiced for a number of years, and had an opportunity to invest, partner in a hospital development in Northwest Houston. And that's really where my eye was caught on real estate. It was an initial 30-acre purchase of land. And then subsequently, after developing the hospital over the next 36, 48 months with investor partners, we started looking at a wheel and spoke methodology of steering patients to the hospital. And with that came acquisition of land as well as vertical developments out in the community, oftentimes 5 to 10 miles from the hospital. And that's very similar to a retail play, because you're looking at traffic counts, you're looking at areas where there's not only growth, but there's new rooftops, grocery stores, and you want to be able to provide medical homes for all of those new residents. And so with that, we started doing real estate development. Of course, it was in the medical space, and we developed four campuses, as it would be, imaging centers, emergency rooms. So over that 15-year period, we developed a lot of medical space. As the pandemic hit, and we'd already, at that point in time, exited the hospital, I wanted to do more in real estate. What subsequently happened, as a lot of you all know, in real estate, there was a lot of liquidity in the market, a lot of cap rate compression. So asset values were very high, even with lower interest rates. And at that point in time, I took a little bit of a look-see for about 12 months, see where the market went. Finally decided with my co-founder at Malabar Hill that Real estate's great, but where we really wanted to play in is the development space where we're taking products, assets out of the ground. It's a lot of heavy lifting, but that's where we basically landed when it comes to real estate. So a lot of real estate background in medical. My partner has done a lot of retail, hospitality, climate control storage, but we do retail asset development now.
Right. So what kind of asset classes that you focus on when it comes down to ground up construction? Is it more of self-storage or are there other assets also that you start off with, you construct it and then you just sell it off?
Yeah, so we're very, very specific here. We're in the retail space, but I like to differentiate. You know, when we say retail, that's a very broad spectrum. We think of shopping malls, anchored, you know, Targets, Walmarts, and that's not where we play. We play in what we call retail service centers, which are typically 15 to 20,000 square feet, and they're sitting within the community or within a neighborhood. So if you kind of think of there's a drive-through for a coffee shop or a medical user or personal care like the nail salon or hair, your primary care doctor office in the community, that's our typical tenant. So our tenants are our business as it relates to retail service centers. One is that our tenants aren't typically selling products. They're selling services. And so oftentimes I'm saying we're kind of Amazon proof. Tenancy for these shopping strips were absolutely stable during the pandemic. That's one. Two, what also differentiates is that we are developers and then subsequent landlords. And so we're a B2B business. We're dealing with businesses versus kind of direct to consumer. And then the other thing that we do is we may do some land development and then do a shopping strip on some component of that land development. But it's typically in 5 to 7,000 home communities, which are oftentimes will have what's called a commercial reserve. So a parcel of land, which is reserved for retail development to really amenitize the neighborhood. Nobody wants to drive 5 miles to get their pizza on a Friday night. And so I bring that up because almost every one of our retail centers has a pizza concept in it.
Got it. So that's great news. So when it comes down to this, what is the duration of time that once the investor invests in it, starts seeing a return? Or do they get a pref, because there is no cash on cash in this particular thing. So is it like they just get the back end or is it they get anything through the hold? How does that work for you? Because you are a B2B.
Yeah, that's a great question. So as opposed to a cash flowing asset, you're absolutely right. There's not going to be a quarterly check with our investments. That's the first and foremost. The greatest benefit our investors see is we have a shorter life cycle. We're merchant builders. So from the time of acquisition of that land to the time that we exit is typically 36 to 48 months. So approximately 9 to 12 months to do what we call permitting or entitlement work. Another 12 months to construct. And during that first 2 year period where we're doing our entitlement work as well as construction, we're pre-leasing already.
So, and I know you have to be SEC compliant, but if I were to ask you from a 30,000 foot view, what is that interests an investor to invest in something like that? What kind of returns? Because obviously majority of the investors, they look at it, it's like, hey, am I going to get any cash flow out of this? What does the back end look like? Obviously, you did mention that, okay, that this takes anywhere between 24 to 36 months from start to completion, during which period I think the investors will not be seeing any kind of returns. But it probably is pretty heavy back-ended, I would presume.
Yeah, I mean, our typical internal rates of return are sitting in the low 20s. So that usually equates to a return on equity of approximately 1.8 to 2. So it's going to typically be higher than just saying a cash flowing asset that you may have to buy at a premium. So our ingoing cap rates are typically what we deliver our buildings at is typically like an 8.75 or a 9 cap. And the investment sales market is typically, and even in this interest environment, it's about 6.5%. So about a 200 basis point spread.
Okay.
So just to kind of answer your question, yes, not cash flowing, but it's a pretty big lift on the back end.
Absolutely. And I think there are definitely investors who love that part of it as well. I think I think this is the place where, let me ask you this question. I think this is a very interesting one because, you know, when we are into certain projects and we start doing capital raises, you find different types of investors, right? Some of them will be like, man, you want to hold it on for like 5 years or 7 years or 10 years, that's too long for them. They're like, I don't even know whether I'll live through this whole thing, right? So do you think your ideal investor avatar would be more on the elderly side because they can get a large portion of money within a short period of time? Or would it be for you, your best one would be are those younger ones who can wait, you know, who don't need the cash flow because they're still earning, they're getting the money, and they will get a bigger payback after a couple of months.
I think you bring up a very good point, which is, well, to answer the question, we have investors across the board. Today, we have over 100 investors. Some are early professionals, some are latter portion of the career. I think 3 to 4 years resonates with most people. They get that, right? I explain to investors why we exit or have some type of exit strategy is it actually insulates us from interest rate, right? We're not here to ride an interest rate, whether it's high or low. Our thesis has always been we're going to exit. Now, having said that, you know, if someone came to us like an investor group and said, look, all of us are friends and colleagues, us 15 investors or friends or colleagues, and we would like to 1031 and push, like we love this asset. Could you do that for us? Well, absolutely. Because, you know, we're not raising $10 million for any one given asset. It's typically $2 million. And so that's easily conceivable that, and, you know, a group of like-minded and we could develop on their behalf. We have lots of shopping strips that would fit that bill. So I think as a syndication, we have a lot of, we're very malleable as it relates to what type of exit for our investors. If we want to simply cash out refi, general partner is completed what they've done, such as ourselves, and the investors want to retain the asset for tax savings, cash flow, absolutely. And I think the most important thing is that you don't have to be a seasoned management company to really manage an 8-tenant shopping strip. There's plenty of people that do that. And also it's pretty economical to manage one of these because like I said, at the end of the day, it's a B2B business. So it's only 8 tenants, which is a little bit different than say multifamily or something like that.
Got it. And obviously a little bit different than a bigger strip mall or a mall, I would say. Am I correct?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. I would tell you that, you know, if you were, the analogy to that is if you're trying to get into the single rental home space or multifamily space, and you just don't want to take on a, say, 200 unit site, you know, there's a lot of people taking on a 4 or 8-plex, right? Well, I think the same analogy to that is that if you are looking to get into commercial real estate space, you know, a 15 or I say a 10 to 15,000 square foot shopping strip, while the pricing is different than obviously in the single space, from a commercial real estate space, if it's stabilized, it's probably not that difficult to manage.
So unlike some of the other asset classes, such as multifamily or, senior housing and so on, where a person, when they take an existing one, where they can have jumbo depreciation, or, you know, and cost segregations, that is not possible in something like this. So where do you see an investor coming in, and when they make this money, is 1031 exchange their only place to go to save on taxes, or do they have any other options?
Yeah, I mean, so No, it's a good point, which is why we have to give higher yields. That's first and foremost. To answer the question about depreciation, once we start getting occupancy, so basically we're net cash flow positive and we have net operating income, we can start depreciating pro rata the shopping strip. But again, like I said, we're a merchant builders. So it's not like we're holding it for 4 or 5 years. The minute the last lease is signed, we're putting together a strategy to exit into the capital markets. 1031 is an absolute option. And we don't necessarily have to do a 1031 day one. If all the investors are like-minded, we can do a reverse 1031 as well. So I think there's a lot of options. It's just, you know, everyone's sitting down at the table. The one thing that allows us to do that is that, again, we're not a $10 million raise where there potentially is, say, 50 or 100 investors. Not that you couldn't do it with that. This is just fewer investors. Our typical syndication is 15 to 20 investors.
Okay.
Now sometimes people like big, numbers and big raises. I tell people that is not a part of our investment thesis. What I'd rather do is have people invest a little in every one of our projects or more of our projects. You get diversification from geography. I would like to say every one of our assets performs better than the next. But that's just not the case in real estate. All of them perform well. But that's where diversification always comes in.
No, so has Malabar Hill Capital ever considered going as a JV on any of these? Because as you mentioned, that the raises are typically anywhere between, $1.5 to $2 million.
Yeah, absolutely. We're in talks with co-sponsors today about that very thing, where typically our historical product is about 15 or 20,000 square feet. We're seeing a lot of demand for drive-through. And so what's happening is we're developing, say, 2 12,000 square foot shopping strips adjacent to each other. Well, what that does that afford us to do? That affords to have one syndication have 12,000 and another have 12,000 square feet. And then all of a sudden the equity stack seems a little bit more achievable for one co-sponsor, say $1.2 or $1.3 million. And so to that respect, if there is certainly a co-sponsor that, and it doesn't, I'm just giving you round numbers, it feels like, hey, I can bring all the equity dollars. Certainly we can create a JV model and make it work for both parties. And like I said, it works even more so if at the end of our stabilization period, the JV partner says, you know what, we really like this. It's a legacy asset. It's brand new. We'll buy out the general partner and we're just going to hold on to this product. And the reason behind that is very simple. We're delivering the asset at a 9 cap. You take out the general partner for about 100 basis points less. You would never be able to buy that shopping strip at an 8 cap. I told you the capital market's 6.5. So it really is a win-win because the day that you're able to achieve, buy it, the general partner is out. Now, what you're talking about as it relates to tax savings or the large depreciation and cost segregation absolutely comes into play. So it's a win-win.
Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So for someone who is new to, this business, I'm talking about as from an investor's perspective, and me being an investor, if I were to ask you, what are the challenges that a person or hiccups does you as a developer sees, which could delay the returns, or has it ever happened to you?
Yeah, I would tell you in development, hurdles is the norm. So I know that frightens people, but the flip side of that is you invest with us and my co-founder because of experience, right? So at the end of the day, you're investing, and I would say that's for any type of syndicator. Look at the history. Now Malabar Hill is new and we're only exiting our newest assets soon. Look at our track record prior to Malabar Hill. Hurdles are normal. I mean, I would say our first three shopping strips, all of them had hurdles. We're building in master plan communities. There are significant community regulations, municipality regulations, architectural regulations. They have very strict standards. You have to abide by those, and they can all pose hurdles. Sometimes you have budgetary constraints. I recall on one of our shopping strips, the LED lights was $125,000 over budget. We were able to reverse engineer and get that under budget. I can think of another shopping strip, and I'm going to talk a little bit in development terms, but the adjacent development had blanket easement through our site for water. And that was not on the original survey when we purchased the property. So title did not pick it up. So we had to coordinate the cutoff of water to the adjacent site in the middle of the night. And this is a publicly traded company's asset adjacent to us, reroute the water, and then continue our development. So look, hurdles are there. And I would say whether it's development or cash yielding asset where you're doing CapEx or it's a core asset, you have to have all of those contingencies built in. Nothing goes as exactly as planned. And the only way to mitigate that is experience and having investors that understand that. And again, I'm not suggesting that people should have endless patience, but you're going to have hurdles. The other flip side of that is, you know, we have developed with conviction, as it would be. If it makes sense, I drive every site, and I ask my investors to drive the sites as well. We build in master plan communities. Most of our investors live in large communities, so it makes total sense. So, you know, at the end of the day, invest in what makes sense to you. You know, if you use a fast food place or a coffee shop, that probably makes sense to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So do you have any specific states that you focus on? Are you nationwide? Is there any specific places that you focus more on?
Yeah. Look, I live in Houston. I believe in Texas, in the Sun Belt area. We're lucky that we're experiencing significant and strong job growth. So we mainly develop, I say mainly, we only develop in the Texas Triangle, which is Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio, and Austin market. We're pretty type A individuals. My partner and I, we like to drive our sites very regularly. And so developing outside the state would not allow for that. So when you invest with us, you're investing with people that, you know, figuratively get their hands dirty. And so we're operators at the end of the day. And so we're going to develop pretty close to where we're at.
So Dr. Desai, you are an active physician, and so you're also taking care of the...
Each week, we dive deep into real estate investing, uncovering the secrets that have helped countless individuals build wealth and enjoy a boss-like retirement. We've got you covered, from property investment basics to advanced strategies for maximizing your retirement income. Join our exclusive investors community to learn about passive real estate investment opportunities. Stay tuned for our next episode, and here's to your continued success in real estate investing.